On this episode of Post Game Shake, we talk about March Madness, Rob Gronkowski retiring from the National Football League, and we bring on St. Louis Cardinals prospect Connor Jones to talk about his time in spring training and trying to make the MLB roster.
Welcome back to Post Game Shake episode 21. We've got a great show for you today, a great interview, but before we get to that, Muzz, how are you?
I would say of all of our episodes, I'm probably doing worse than the other ones.
Personally?
Yeah, I just think, so we talked about how great like this time of year is for sports in general, but this Monday, it's crazy how much this Monday sucks for me right now.
Do you want to get into why it sucks for you? Or?
Well, one, Gronk retired yesterday. I was at the roller rink. I was pumped because it was 55 degrees out. I was putting on my rollerblades. I started scrolling through Instagram because that's what happens. I can't stay off my phone for that long. And I see Gronk's picture pop up, and I was like, no, please don't be what I think it is. And it was exactly what I think it is. Obviously not ideal. And then on top of that, I already have two of my Final Four teams eliminated in my bracket, Murray State being one of them. And you're off the hook for buying a jersey, so you probably feel pretty good about
Well, as much as I wanted to hop on the bandwagon, it's great that your bracket isn't doing so well because it gives me a better chance to win.
Your bracket's not doing too hot either.
It's not okay. If it's not doing too hot means having all four of my Final Four teams in, then sure, my bracket's not doing so hot. But my Monday, I mean, Mondays are Mondays, but yeah, we're going to touch on the Gronk thing later on in the episode. So I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. It's a great Monday if you're asking me.
Yeah, it's just weird. There's been a lot of college basketball on since Thursday, and you kind of come down from that high on this Monday. And I don't know, just not much to do except podcast, which isn't a bad thing.
Exactly. So
getting back on the horse.
Exactly. So we have a great interview today with a Chesapeake, Virginia native, Connor Jones, baseball guy. We had Dave on as a baseball guy as well. So it's good to have another baseball guy on, a UVA kid, and then also pitching for the St. Louis Cardinals organization. So we had a good time interviewing, right, Muzz?
We had a great time interviewing him. He's awesome. He's a great kid. You guys should be looking forward to this.
Yeah, it was an easy conversation. I like when those, you know, they go easier than expected, and he was a great person to interview. So without further ado, wanna kick it to Connor?
Let's do it. All right, here's our interview with Connor.
We have the pleasure of bringing on a Chesapeake, Virginia native, a kid who I have followed closely over the years as he played baseball with a lot of my childhood teammates and friends, a Virginia high school state champion, a College World Series champion, and a 2016 St. Louis Cardinals draft pick. Welcome to the podcast, Connor Jones. What's going on?
I'm hanging out, guys. How you doing?
Doing good, man. We're really happy to have you. We appreciate you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be on.
I thought so. Timmy, I just think it's so funny. So we haven't met Connor before.
No, neither of us.
I love that Timmy, like the second sentence was like a kid I've followed a lot over the years. It's just kind of like a little creepy, you know?
All right. Well, it's only creepy in the sense that we've never met, but like,
yeah,
because he played baseball with like a bunch of my good friends growing up. I like went to, you know, a handful of your high school games and stuff. So
yeah, it's just the circle you're in, and it's all good.
Yeah,
it's
yeah, no worries at all.
Just giving him a hard time.
Yeah. Screw you, Muzz. Yeah. Anyway, so what's going on? What's today like for you?
I am currently down in Jupiter, Florida, at spring training.
That's so sick.
Yeah. Early mornings, and then done early. And then get to hang out and kind of recover a little bit in the afternoon. So,
I mean,
can't complain.
We're going to dive into it eventually, but I'd love to know, like, what did you do today? What is that? What's the day like for you down there?
So today I so we get into the facility probably like 7:15 in the morning, eat, do all that stuff. Maybe there's like a meeting or two. We then you go just kind of get your body ready for the day. You know, I'll foam rolling, all any arm care stuff you got to take care of and get done. And then we're on, I think today it's nice. We've been playing early games. So we've like games have been starting like 10:30 to try to get it done before it rains. So, you know, start earlier, get out earlier, which is always nice. So, today I had a side, a bullpen at 9 o'clock in the morning, earlier than most, but
yeah,
it's, always fun to throw a bullpen. So I got to do that. And then, and then I actually had a lift. I had to work out right afterwards, and then I actually got dragged into charting the back half of the spring training game today. So we got to see Miles Michaelis was throwing on the backfields with us and Jack Flaherty and some of these guys. So there were some there were a ton of games going on and a lot of action. So it was a pretty fun day today.
Nice. So what's like when does your day typically end?
I mean, I would say anywhere between, you know, one, you know, if you got a 1 o'clock start on the road, you're probably not getting back till 5 or 6. But recently we've been ending pretty early, which is always nice.
It is nice. So it's like you're working from seven to like 2-3 o'clock. I'd take that.
Yeah, and the you know, Florida weather is not the worst. So
no, not at all. Not
nice
at
little all. Nice little bonus.
Absolutely. How close are you guys? So how close is Jupiter to Fort Myers?
Not close. Fort Myers is on the west coast of Florida.
Okay.
So we're 2 hours north of Miami.
Gotcha. I was just down there spring. So this time last year and got to go to a couple spring training games. It was a blast.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. Especially like the Cardinals fans are great. So like everywhere we go, I mean, we're outdrawing, you know, other teams at their home stadium. So the Cardinals faithful is something else, and they come out here and they put on a show. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Go ahead.
What's the farthest spring training like road trip for you guys?
So I went on the one big trip this this spring so far, and that was Lakeland, Florida against the Tigers. They were like they're probably like a little over 2 hours away, and then we went to the Phillies in Clearwater, which is like 3 hours, and then we went to played the Yankees in Tampa, and that's like 3 hours away as well. All right. That's all on the other coast of Florida.
Gotcha.
Dude, that's sick. There's nothing better, I feel like, than spring training baseball, like just hanging out. We've talked about it before. I think if I could be good at one sport and play professionally, it would be like, and make a ton of money, obviously, it'd be baseball. Like, I think it's just such an awesome, like, America's pastime. And then you put all that together in spring training, and it's like the coolest thing going.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's not the worst gig. It's a grind, but it's there's certainly a lot of cool things that come with it.
Yeah,
that's for sure. I think you said it too, Muzz, because we both were big baseball guys growing up, and then we didn't really have it to go the next level. So, but yeah. Anyway, it would be awesome. So, all right, let's dive right in. So you won a state championship at Great Bridge High School. That was in 2011, mm-hmm. And then you were drafted by the San Diego Padres during your senior year of high school. So what was that whole process like? We're going to kind of dive into, you know, your time at UVA and when you got drafted again by the Cardinals, but was there a big difference? Was it kind of a weird being a, you know, an 18-year-old kid and having all this attention, I guess, per se, and just kind of talk about that whole process.
Yeah, honestly, it's a weird one. When I was in high school, I honestly just wanted to be the best pitcher in like Chesapeake or Virginia Beach. That was really my focus. And obviously I committed to Virginia after my sophomore year. So, you know, I just kind of, I'm not going to say I took for granted, but I was always just kind of focused on like, that was what my plan was to go there. And so then all of a sudden, like I just kept working and getting better because I wanted to be the best in the area. And eventually I was. And then all of a sudden scouts came knocking and calling and things got really serious. And they were like, you know, what's your number? What's it going to take for you to sign? And I was like, shoot, I don't know. I really never thought I would be in that position. And so I realized how serious things were getting and, you know, scouts talking about like possible first round and that kind of money and stuff. And I was like, you know what, like, I really don't think I've got a number. Like, I'm just going to go to college. I'll talk to you all in 3 years. And that's basically what happened. And I came out and my dad and I kind of made a statement that said, I'm going to go to college, you know, talk to, as far as to the professional teams, talk to you guys in 3 years, basically.
Now, was that reason going to college, was that more based off you wanting to get an education and like do that? Or was it because you felt like that was the best way for you to develop?
No, I mean, education is a nice thing. It's a bonus and I value education, but you know, you could get an education at any time. Whereas baseball, you know, your playing life, it isn't, you know, you can't do that when you're 50 years old. Right. So, for me, I'd say I wasn't like as informed about pro ball as I was about college. And so as far as my development, I definitely thought that college was the best route just because, you know, you hear all these stories about the minor leagues, about, you know, playing on backfields with a bunch of kids from the Dominican. And, you know, I just didn't know. It's not, I didn't have older brothers. I didn't really have like a ton of friends that were in pro ball. So I really just didn't know. And so I did know about college because you talked to the coaches and I knew some of the players and stuff. So that was the route I went.
Absolutely. So, I mean, UVA is obviously a really an unbelievable college baseball program. Were there any other schools that you were seriously looking at? I mean, committing after your sophomore season is pretty early, no?
Yeah. In the baseball recruiting scene is pretty wild, in the fact that a lot of kids do commit pretty early. But, I mean, my recruiting was pretty strange compared to most of the friends I've talked to. I got my first – the first school that reached out was Virginia Tech, I believe. And I just had no interest in Blacksburg. Yeah, at the time, I wasn't like a UVA diehard fan or anything. You know, I always thought it'd be cool to go to, like, you know, Georgia Tech or some out-of-state school that, you know, people would go ooh and ah and, like, think that's cool. And I very quickly realized that's not what it's about.
It's just a little bit, yeah.
It's about finding the right fit. So then I heard from South Carolina, and I wasn't sure. There were a lot of unknowns about them. And then I heard from Virginia, and when I really thought about it, it was like, you know, they're currently playing in the College World Series. Like, they're one of the top programs in the country. They're the state school. Love the campus. It's the perfect size of school. So, you know, that made the decision pretty easy. And short, the recruiting process started and finished in, like, I think it was like 2.5 or 3 weeks. And
I, oh, that's really
so quick. It was not something that dragged on, and it was started and over very quickly. So
no, it's cool to have a baseball guy on. We've had a bunch of hockey guys on so far, and we obviously want to diversify things a little bit and get more perspectives. But mm-hmm. And being hockey guys ourselves, obviously Timmy, we both played baseball when we were younger. Timmy was a lot better at baseball than I was. But the recruiting process is so different. Like, it's just crazy. So for hockey is the complete maybe extreme compared to baseball, where you're really playing a couple extra years after high school to get looked at for college, unless mm-hmm. unless you're a stud, you maybe commit your senior year at a prep school or something, which happens, absolutely. But you're talking about, you're, what, 16 years old, and you're talking to these schools and making a pretty big life decision.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of kids committing their freshman year, too. Like, it just gets earlier and earlier. So there's a lot of, you know, life-altering decisions might be a little strong, but there's some very important decisions that you're having to make at a really young age.
Did you ever, did you ever feel like, you know, as you were, obviously UVA is great. Did you ever feel like, okay, as you got older, am I making the right decision, or were you happy with where you're at? A lot of hockey guys, they'll decommit and they'll go somewhere, like they'll go to like a BC. Obviously mm-hmm. UVA is probably like the BC of hockey. So it's really, you're probably already in that great spot, but it's also a big weight off your chest. So, I mean, you're going through the high school ranks mm-hmm. knowing where your next step is. I don't really even know what my question is, but was there I kind of just walked myself through it.
So, yeah.
You know, were you happy with your decision, obviously?
So are you talking about decommitting like in high school or something, or
like a lot of hockey guys will decommit. They'll go to, like, you know, I was talking to a kid today, he committed to Union, and then BC came along and they were like, hey, we want you to come and play for BC. He decommitted from Union and he joined BC, he signed with BC because,
right,
you know, it's a better opportunity.
Yeah.
Is there anything like that for high school? Just because it's so early, I feel like it's tough for kids to make that decision and then stick with it until they're 19 years old.
Yeah. I mean, at least for me, the baseball coaches and the other colleges and stuff seemed pretty straight up. And I didn't think there was really any, like, I'm not going to say it's shady, but like trying to steal recruits and stuff. Like, I never encountered anything like that. I think that would only happen if, you know, some kid commits when he's just a decent player and all of a sudden he develops into a stud and some big D1 schools come hollering. But other than that, you know, I didn't encounter any of that. So, you know, I think that's a good thing, because, you know, that's just something I wouldn't want to get tied up in.
So, yeah, absolutely. So then let's hop right into UVA. I mean, you were a starter through most of your high school career, if I'm not mistaken. And then freshman year, you came out of the bullpen all year. Was it a big adjustment for you to kind of go from starting high school to bullpen, or was it kind of a seamless one, and did UVA make it easy for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was a starter my whole life up until that point. And it's funny trying to think back to that, because I think I made one start that year. I came out of the bullpen the whole year. And, you know, I think that made it pretty easy for me. You know, I don't remember that being too hard a change. Coming out of the bullpen is different. Like, I got off to like a red hot start that season, my freshman year. And I started getting put in some really big and tough spots, like, you know, coming in with runners on base, you know, on the road when the crowd's going crazy and stuff. So, you know, that was kind of a learning curve for me, you know, having to come in the middle of the innings and stuff like that. That's really the hard part with coming out of the bullpen. But But no, I think, you know, I thought, at least I hope I had a pretty smooth transition to it.
I mean, probably. So what's the, just coming on with runners in scoring position, like what's the like one thing or a couple things that, like, when you step on that mound and throw your first pitch against, you know, whoever guy, you know, a couple guys on, probably not a ton of outs or, you know, whatever. Like, what are the few things that are going through your head that you're like, okay, is it, I want to get this first one over for a strike, or like, what are some things that are going through your head?
Yeah. I mean, I think you gotta, there's a couple of things. You gotta know the situation. So like, you gotta know who's hitting, you gotta know where the runners are on base. So for example, if there's a runner on second and third and first base is open and there's a power hitter up, you know, unless he's got a glaring weakness you want to attack, you might, you know, you don't really have to go after him because you've got some wiggle room with first base open, so you don't have to necessarily just throw a fastball down the middle, you know, knowing he could hit it over the wall and change the game. So right. I think just, you know, you got to come in, you got to be sharp right away. So knowing that and knowing situations and stuff is important.
I mean, a lot more stressful than starting. I mean, obviously coming on, no outs, no runs, nothing, no one on base. I mean, just talk about, like, I know it's hard to quantify, but just like how much more stressful a situation. And do you think, like, starting the bullpen your freshman year and going through some of those tough spots kind of better prepared you for when you ran to those as a starter later on in your career?
So it's funny. I'm actually a reliever again now. So when the Cardinals drafted me, that kind of told me, you know, it's only a matter of time until I'm going to be a reliever. And they said, your skill set fits it perfectly. It's a place that we see you in the future, you know, in the big leagues and stuff. So I heard that, and I, you know, I was kind of just waiting. I said, it's just a matter of time. And sure enough, at the end of this past year, that was the time. And they moved me as to reliever, and I went to the Arizona Fall League and continued to be a reliever there. And then now I'm preparing as a reliever this year. And I honestly love it. You know, for some reason, at the beginning of the games, I almost get like a little like nervous and anxious. And then as the game goes on, you kind of just settle in with the flow of the game. And so as a reliever, you come in the middle of the game when you can feel, you know, at least I feel more relaxed in the middle of the game. Or even if it's in the end of the game in a bigger situation, I still feel more relaxed than maybe at the beginning. So, I mean, that could obviously change as you go on throughout your career. But for me, it's something that I've really embraced, you know, just coming in as a reliever right now.
It's definitely such a mental battle. I feel like it's similar to like being a kicker in football. Like the teams kind of set it up for you, and yeah. it's on you. It's like, don't screw it up, you know?
Which, yeah, and you 100% can't think that way, but
right, exactly.
but yeah, you know, there are some similarities, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I played goalie in hockey, and a lot of times the mental side of it to me was making sure I wasn't thinking about not screwing up, because a lot of like being a goalie, it's like, you know, if you don't want the puck in the net, you're not going to lose. Like, you're kind of based off how many times you screw up.
Yeah.
And for you guys, you know, coming in relief, you have the opportunity just to lock it down, and you're like, great. But, you know, if you guys are up 4-1 and, you know, shit kind of hits the fan, it kind of looks bad on you, even though it's not all you, you know, it's yeah. Everybody around you too. So
for sure.
definitely mentally exhausting.
No doubt.
So hop right into sophomore year. You guys had a really good season where, you know, top ranked most of the year, kind of winning the College World Series, and made it to the obviously the championship series against Vanderbilt. So you started game one. I mean, is that like one of the best moments of your life, knowing that like you were, you know, getting the ball for game one of the College World Series?
Yeah, it was crazy, man. So that's a moment I'll never forget. We were playing Arkansas in Omaha, and I tell baseball fans all the time, like, if you're a real baseball fan, I think Omaha should be on your bucket list. It's just the way the city embraces it and everything. It's crazy. And the fans that come out and support it, it's, you know, it's awesome. So we were, that was Andrew Benintendi's Arkansas team. Obviously he's had a quite an accomplishing career so far in the big leagues with the Red Sox. And so yeah, when I was warming up in the bullpen, you know, I like to tell a story where I think the stadium holds about 25,000 there in Omaha. And I mean, the first game's like always a sellout, and so if there was 25,000 people there, there was 24,500 Arkansas fans, and, you know, no disrespect to the UVA fans, but there was probably, you know, 300 UVA fans and 200 miscellaneous fans. So
that is crazy.
It's just so far for us to travel there, and, you know, Arkansas is nowhere near as far, and so these SEC fans are crazy, and so they were doing their when they were announcing the starting lineups, they were doing their Woo Pig Suey chant. It was just echoing throughout the stadium. And that was like, you know, that was probably one of the biggest adrenaline rushes I've ever had at this point in my career. You know, it was kind of like that, you know, flee or fight, you know, syndrome that people get. And it was, I was just like, it's just, it's go time. So that was really cool.
What is the Woo Pig Suey chant?
That's like their mascot's the Razorbacks. And like it's a hog. And Woo Pig Suey is like their fight call, basically. So one corner was screaming Woo, and another corner was screaming Pig, and the other side of the stadium was screaming Suey, and the place was rocking. So it was pretty wild.
That's crazy. Awesome. Yeah, that is overwhelming. That's cool.
And so then, I mean, you guys had a really good run, obviously, getting the College World Series, and then, you know, winning the whole thing and you know, kind of being able to experience it, but also, you know, really contribute through the whole process. I mean, was it a special season from the beginning, or did it kind of come together late? Just, you know, what was that season like?
It was definitely not a special season from the beginning. You know, one of our best players and a future high draft pick, and he's on the brink of the big leagues now, Joe McCarthy, he was hurt. He's with the Rays. He was hurt almost the whole year with a back injury. You know, our number one pitcher, Nathan Kirby, who was eventually a first round pick with the Brewers. He went hurt about, you know, maybe a third of the way through, missed almost the whole year. And actually he came back to close out the final game in Omaha, but we were down a lot of guys, and I'm pretty sure we finished seventh in the ACC that year. And that was the lowest a team to ever win the national championship has finished in their conference. So, you know, a lot of people said we didn't deserve to be there, but, you know, they let us in the tournament as a 3 seed and sent us out to California to play San Diego State, Southern California, and Santa Barbara. You know, it was us versus California out there, and we took care of business. We just fought, man. We just fought, and we got hot at the right time, and that's all it really took. So
yeah, absolutely. That's all that matters.
Did you get both of those guys back for the playoffs?
Yeah, Joe came back, you know, I think right before the playoffs, and, you know, it's just so hard when you miss the whole year and just rust and stuff that you're just trying to come back. And he I know he had a couple big hits in the regional out there in California, but he's a difference maker for us. And then Nathan got healthy and came back and got the last 6 outs for us in Omaha. So that was a special moment for him.
That's sick.
So, yeah.
So, and then obviously one more year at UVA in your junior, you were just, you know, pretty unstoppable, 11-1, 2.234 ERA, all ACC. But you guys didn't do as well as a team that year. I mean, obviously, it's more fun to win. Everyone knows that. But what was the season like following up a national championship game? I don't know if you guys do you think you guys were complacent at all? Was it just kind of a weird season, or kind of how that whole season go after a national championship?
Honestly, we had a really young team that year. Yeah, seniors aren't like too common in baseball because most guys get drafted after their junior year. We might have had, you know, a couple, and I think we had a couple juniors, but we lost so many juniors the prior 2 years to the draft, and we had a lot of freshmen that were in that year that ended up, you know, turning out to be great players, but at the time they're still freshmen, and we just came up a little short. I mean, we had a good group and we played well together, but, you know, it's baseball, and, you know, sometimes crazy things happen, and we just came up a little short that year. So it was frustrating. I mean, my first year is having, you know, the year ended in the final game of the season in Omaha with a win and with a loss. You know, that kind of becomes an expectation, but, you know, like I said, it didn't happen that year.
Did you know, kind of going in your junior season, did you at what point did you have an inkling that you're like, okay, I'm probably going to get drafted, and if all goes well, I'm probably going to forego my senior season?
I mean, that had been the plan basically since my senior year of high school, just because if you're going to go to college and if you're going to go play your senior year, you make it really hard on yourself to get any money out of the draft, just because from a pure negotiating leverage standpoint, you know, if you're going to go back for your senior year and the Yankees offer you, you know, $100 as a senior, what are you going to say? No. Like, where are you going to go play?
Right.
So yeah. It's just kind of one of those things where, like, you got to go after your junior year. It's not like, at least as far as I know, it's not anything that's like frowned upon or, oh wow, he didn't come back for his junior year, like, or senior year. You know, almost everyone leaves after their junior year. So
that makes sense though. Cause if, yeah, you have that senior year as leverage, is that's basically what you're saying. You say, hey, give me what I want, or I'm going to go back and play college again, kind of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, you really have no intention of doing that because,
right, yeah,
like I said, it's just not a good option, but you know, that's kind of the way it works.
Absolutely. So, I mean, talk about the second draft experience. I mean, a little higher in the rounds. I'm assuming because you had shown interest that you were gonna, you know, probably sign with whoever drafted you if all went well. Just talk about that entire experience. Well, you know, what were the interviews like? Did you have an inkling the Cardinals were gonna take you? That, you know, that whole thing.
I really didn't. Like, you know, people ask a lot. Like, you know, who do you want to get drafted by? And it's like, you know, I don't know. Like, they choose us. We don't choose them. So. I really didn't know. I knew that their scouting director had come to see me play earlier in the year. And so I had said from the get-go, I'd rather get drafted in a later round or lower in the draft to a team that is a great fit than go higher in the draft to a team that's a worse fit for me. And I think that's exactly what happened. So I, you know, when I heard it was the Cardinals, it's like, you know, I couldn't have been more excited because their main reputation is promoting players from the minor leagues to the big leagues, you know, promoting from within and then developing pitchers. Those are like their two, you know, their two calling cards. So, you know, for me, that's like, that's awesome. What a great opportunity. So I was super fired up.
Absolutely. And so you signed a hefty $1.1 million contract. And the only question we have about that is, did you make, you know, one big kind of splurge purchase, or did you do the frugal thing and save it all away?
I'd like to say both. I bought a car.
There you go. That's what I would do too.
And then saved it all away. So
what kind of car are we talking?
It's funny. I got a BMW M4 convertible, and then I actually just traded it in like 2 days ago. So funny timing, you ask.
Wow, that is weird. Yeah. That's a nice car, though.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of fun. I'd never planned on keeping it forever, but I had some fun with it while I had it. So it was fun.
What'd you trade it in for?
I just got a 2019 Toyota 4Runner with like a thousand miles on it. So got a good deal on it. So
nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So do you have any special memories from the draft process? More so the lead up to the draft process, kind of like any tough interview questions? We had kind of talked to a couple of NHL draft picks, and they'd said that they remember, you know, one specific interview of some guys asking some hard questions. What, did you have any experiences like that, or is there an interview process when it comes to MLB draft?
Yeah. I mean, the way they did it at Virginia is there's like, you have a handful of days where the scouts come in and can meet with you. And like, I don't know whether to call it an interview or a meeting, but they just kind of, you know, ask you some questions and just try to get to know you. And I think it's more just kind of like get to see your character and, you know, what kind of person you are. You know, how you handle yourself in front of people. And so it's not like a, you know, you hear these stories about the NFL combine, and it definitely didn't strike me as anything like that. But no, it's just pretty basic stuff. I mean, it was definitely, you know, the couple of days before the draft, it was, you know, and especially the night of the draft, was pretty nerve wracking and anxious more than anything. So, you know, and I slid a little bit farther than I thought I was going to go. So that was, you know, just a roller coaster. That was a wild, you know, wild ride. So, but at the end of the day, everything happens for a reason. I was happy with where I went.
What's the difference in like a first round signing bonus and a second round signing bonus?
So the thing is, they're like, each pick has kind of like a slot, a designated amount of money for that slot. But
right.
You know, the Rangers, or we'll just make up a team. The Rangers could draft a high school kid in the first round pick, and the slot could be $2.5 million, but he might sign for $1.5 million, and then, you know, or take a college kid on it. He'll sign a deal, sign for $1 million less, and then in the second or third round, they'll sign the high school kid and give him that extra $1 million, and you know, kind of work a deal with him. And so there's ways teams kind of work around it. But
okay,
if you are a if you're a top 10 overall pick, you're getting at least $5 million probably, and then you know, if you're going to the top two rounds, you're probably getting close to $1 million, you know, depending on, you know, if you're taking an above slot deal or a below slot deal or whatnot. But if you're a first round pick, you're probably getting $2 million at least. That's for the whole first round. So
damn, that's solid.
So say you were a senior in high school and there was an inclination that you thought you were going to go first round, let's just say top 10. Would that have changed your decision to go to college?
Yeah. I mean, that's like, it's the thing is, it's not only about the money, if you're a top 10 pick, but if you're going in the top 10, that means, you know, the organization, first of all, you're probably really, really good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's probably
but the one other thing is that the organization definitely is going to value the crap out of you. Like, so there's a difference between, you know, being like a 40th round pick or something and going like top 10 overall. I mean, people, you know, can say it's not fair or whatever, but it's just how it is. So, you know, that would definitely have changed my mind. And, you know, hopefully I would have been more informed about professional baseball at that point if I was in that position.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
But yeah, that's a different situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever get any idea from the Cardinals that they were really into you, or was it completely surprising just that you got taken by them?
No, so I was on the phone with my agent, you know, throughout the night, and he had told me that, you know, I knew the Blue Jays were really interested. And so then, you know, he said, I think I was taken 70th. And he said, if the Blue Jays don't take you here at 63, the Cardinals are definitely taking you at 70. So I kind of knew that. And then the Blue Jays didn't take me. And so then I was just kind of like watching as the next couple of picks went by on TV. And then sure enough. So it was pretty cool. I knew a couple of picks beforehand. I didn't really tell. I just had a small little gathering at the house with some immediate friends and family. And I didn't say anything. So I didn't let them. I was in the other room on the phone, and I didn't tell them, and we just watched it happen on TV.
That's awesome.
Oh, why a little sneaky? Like, I love that.
Before we move on, yeah, I got to ask, how am I missing something? You were drafted in the second round, 70th overall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How was the 70th pick in the second round?
Good question. So, yeah, obviously there's the first 30 picks for the 30 teams or whatever, but then – there's what's called the compensation round or the sandwich round, because it's in between rounds one and two. And it's for like for example, I think when the Cardinals signed Dexter Fowler the other year from the Cubs as a free agent, because the Cubs lost him. I think the way it works is if you're deemed like a good enough player, the Cubs will receive a draft pick for that.
Okay.
So we had a first round pick, two compensation round picks, and then I was the second round pick. So
gotcha.
There might have been 15 picks or something, so maybe, you know, 31 through 45 was the compensation round or something. So just making up numbers. So then that would bump the second round back 15 picks or so.
Okay, gotcha. I was just trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, that's a good question.
That makes sense. And now do those guys obviously make more money? That whole sliding scale includes those middle round guys.
Okay. Yeah.
Got it.
So, no, it's good. Gotta inform our listeners.
And me. Yeah.
And you, yeah. So I have all your minor league kind of moves and different teams and stats, and I'm not gonna read them all off, but I have kind of one question through the whole process. And you mentioned that the Cardinals are known for promoting from within and developing pitchers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is the stigma of playing minor league baseball kind of all it is kind of played up to be? I mean, you've moved up from rookie ball to Class A short to Class A advanced to trip to Double A to Triple A, and kind of up and down from Double A and Triple A. I mean, is it as much of a grind as it's kind of made out to be, or kind of how's the process been for you?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. I mean, like you just said, I've went from from playing in the ACC and going from, you know, playing in big schools to immediately going to the GCL, which is our Gulf Coast League, which is, you know, the lowest level of professional baseball on American soil. And there was no scoreboard. There was no, you know, fans could walk right up to the dugout, you know, the chain link fence. So it was different. And I got to hang out there for a couple weeks and just get acclimated to pro ball with some of the other kids that I got drafted with. And then, last year, you know, I made my AAA debut in Las Vegas. I'd never been there before or anything like that. So, you know, that just shows you, you know, the higher up you go, the nicer it gets. And even in our AA affiliate in Springfield, Missouri, which is about 2 hours from St. Louis, they, you know, on the, at least, definitely on the weekend series, they'll draw, you know, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 fans a game. So, you know, they love their baseball, and that place is rocking out in Springfield. So, you know, all different levels have their pros and cons, but as you work your way up, you definitely get treated better and it gets a lot nicer.
Is that rare for a guy to go? Obviously it's not rare, but is it, how common do you get a guy that starts at that like rookie ball level, mm-hmm. that'll eventually make it to AAA or where you're at in spring training? Like, obviously they develop. I feel like baseball probably has the best development minor league system of all, mm-hmm. maybe with hockey second. And then you look at like football and basketball, it's kind of just college is like the minor league system. But how often do you get guys that really just start at the bottom and make it?
I mean, from the very bottom like that, honestly, I don't think too often. But then again, like there are very few guys that'll get drafted and just, you know, go to double A or something. Like they're probably going to send you to some level of rookie ball or a short season club. No matter if you're a first round pick or how good you are, like even, you know, some of these generational type players like Harper and these guys spent some amount of time in the minor leagues. People never go to straight to the big leagues anymore. And, you know, even if you got a rookie ball for 2 or 3 weeks, like, you know, you're still playing there. So,
yeah. Is it, and Muzz can kind of test this a little more than I can playing a couple of years of pro hockey. But I mean, is it bus trip after bus trip? Is it kind of, you know, just living at hotels and kind of finding a place to live for a short amount of time? Just kind of, is that process very, very stressful?
Yeah, I mean, it also depends on, you know, your personal schedule. So, like, you know, our AA affiliate Springfield is in the Texas League. And, you know, our side of the division is Springfield, Missouri, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Little Rock, Arkansas, and Fayetteville, Arkansas. So those are all 2 or 3 hours away. It's not too bad. But then the other side of the division, because it is the Texas League, is Midland, Texas, Corpus Christi, Texas, San Antonio, Texas, and Frisco, Texas. And those are like... And Corpus Christi is like a 14-hour bus ride.
Whew.
So, you know, they would try to make the schedule somewhat favorable, like, you know, ridiculously early game, like you know, an 11 a.m. game. And then the next night, you know, playing in Corpus Christi. So the bus would drive through the night and get there. But that means you're, like, if you're the starting pitcher that night, like, you might be sleeping on the bus floor. And then, you know, got to pitch the next night. So there are situations like that. AAA, you do fly. We obviously didn't drive from Memphis, Tennessee to Las Vegas. Yeah, there are some flights, but there are still bus trips for ones that are, you know, relatively close. So I
can relate to that a little bit. Like playing minor league hockey for a couple of years, there were games where like we'd be driving somewhere and we took buses everywhere at the AA level, and like I'd be starting that night in net. And I'd be sleeping on the couch in the front of the bus that was, like, you know, basically as good as sleeping on the floor anyway.
Yeah.
Well, you know, guys are sleeping in the back, but I was a rookie, so that's the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part was, did you play in Frisco?
Yeah, I pitched there a couple times. That ballpark there was really nice.
Yeah, we lived in Frisco, so I played in Allen, the Allen Americans. I don't know if you probably wouldn't know who they are. They're a double-A level team.
Gotcha, no, I don't. I got to be honest, I'm not the biggest hockey fan.
No, it's fine. It's so funny. I lived like 1 minute from that stadium, and we drove by there a couple times. It's like that whole area is pretty cool, but it's a sweet stadium. They have a lazy river in center field.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I pitched. I think the day before we got there, so I definitely wasn't pitching them while we were there. And so the next day, I was in the lazy river out there.
So. That's so cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, why not?
Yeah, we had a good relationship with those guys. So a lot of guys went to some games, but I didn't get a chance to. We were like in the playoffs and stuff and when their season started. But that was my biggest regret actually I had two. I didn't get to see a Friday Night Lights game, a high school football game down there. And I didn't get to go to one of those games, but it was pretty cool. I like the atmosphere with those AAA stadiums are sweet.
Yeah, that stadium's great. And that was, as far as a stadium, I think that's the nicest one in the league. They didn't get the most fans, so, you know, not to knock them or anything, but I think the fans definitely went to us. But as far as having the coolest stadium, I mean, who else is a lazy river out there? So,
yeah, right. Yeah,
that's so pretty cool. That is pretty sweet. So let's kind of go right into spring training this year. I mean, it's pretty, like, I was telling someone, oh yeah, well, you know, we're interviewing a kid who's, you know, at spring training for the Cardinals. Like, oh damn, okay. So, like, what's it like, I mean, for you being around guys like Andrew Miller, Adam Wainwright, I mean, Yadier Molina, these guys that you've been watching on TV for years and years and years and probably just looked up to a couple of them. Like, what's that process been like?
Yeah, so this year I actually got invited to big league camp. So I was a part of spring training with all those guys. And, you know, it's pretty cool. Like, you know, I'm not going to lie, being around some of those guys, it's awesome, you know. And then, you know, you might be starstruck for a second, even, you know, no matter how hard you're trying not to be. And then after a little bit, you know, I heard someone say, you realize, you know, they're people just like you and me, and they put their shoe on, they put one shoe on at a time and put one pant leg on at a time. So, you know, and you just try to learn as much as you can from them. You know, I learned a ton from the big league coaching staff and the, you know, Michael Wacha and Waino and those guys. So it's cool. And it's just a learning experience and an opportunity to get better.
Who's the best player that you've pitched against so far? Was there anything that you were like, holy shit, I'm pitching against, you know, this guy?
Yeah. 100% because, when we were on that road trip, like I said, I pitched against the Yankees and, I was getting ready. One of the guys got in trouble before me and they said, get ready. You know, I had to get up and try to help the guy. And they said, you know, get ready for the third hitter. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, the coach says, by the way, the third hitter is Aaron Judge.
In my head, I was like, please say Aaron Judge. I can't believe
it. So I was like, oh, crap. And so my, you know, like, let's go. And so then my heart started racing. And then he actually got out of it. And so then I started the next inning and I faced Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Greg Bird, and Gleyber Torres. So
how'd you do?
Judge had a good at bat. He ended up drawing a walk on a 3-2 pitch. And then first pitch to Stanton, he hit into a double play. So that was exciting. And then I made a stupid pitch call or two and walked Bird and then struck out Gleyber Torres. So that was pretty
whatever.
Cool.
Yeah, whatever. just made a little hotter. Cool, made a little hotter myself. No, it's not a big deal. Yeah,
yeah, that was a really cool experience, and you know, it's one of those things where you kind of black out in the moment, and then you kind of go back and watch the film and get to see it and kind of take it in a little bit.
That's awesome. So, I mean, you kind of mentioned a couple of the guys you're looking up to per se, right? Or guys you're kind of just watching from and trying to learn some. Has there been one guy that, you know, has had that you've been kind of gravitating towards or kind of the opposite, someone who's gravitated towards you and kind of taking you under their wing, you know, so far in spring training?
Yeah. I mean, I think, obviously Yadi is, you know, a first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion, the best catcher ever. So it's, you know, anytime he speaks, you know, he's got the whole room's attention. So it's just really cool being around him, even though, you know, he's working with the catchers a lot or, you know, doing position player stuff where even though he's a catcher and they work with the pitchers a lot, but for me it was probably Adam Wainwright, and you know, just he's one of the best guys I've ever met, and it seemed like at times he kind of took me under his wing, and I definitely went to him a couple times for some questions and just some experience type stuff. So you know, he was great for me and just getting to be in his presence, and you know, he's been through just about everything in this game.
Adam Wainwright's a pretty big name for somebody to take you under your wing. So I imagine, Timmy, you got to be listening to that. Like, that's the coolest thing. I know you're a bigger baseball guy than me, but
yeah, I mean, my first thought was Yadier Molina. I mean, like you said, he's kind of working more with the catchers, but just anything he's going to say, you're going to be like, okay, you're going to listen to whatever he says.
Yeah.
But I mean, Adam Wainwright would have been the next guy for me. And I'm actually, I don't say a closet Indians fan, but I'm kind of a random Indians fan. And so Andrew Miller coming over from the Indians, I mean, that's a pretty good guy to watch from, especially in the bullpen, to kind of figure out how he's attacking hitters and stuff. So, I mean, but Wainwright's a pretty damn good choice.
And Miller's been awesome, and we had some good conversations, especially some, you know, some friendly UVA versus UNC banter, except
there you go.
He made it clear that he was at UNC 10 years before I was at UVA. So
I don't know if that's like a braggy thing to say. That means he's kind of old.
No. Yeah. It's just, you know, he had to let me know.
Absolutely. So what's the, you know, what's the expectation, at least in your mind for the season? Are they pretty good at communicating? I'm assuming if they're known for kind of promoting their players and developing pitchers, they've been pretty straightforward and just kind of communicating with you to the entire process since you've been drafted to now.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely communicated with me. You know, their want for me in the bullpen, and that was nice for me because when that happened, you know, for me, I viewed it as a promotion, and I was like, all right, you know, it's time to go. This is my time right now, and you know, I feel like if some starters didn't know that, and all of a sudden, you know, the coaching staff tells you you're going to be a reliever now. A lot of guys could view that as a demotion or, you know, a negative or a shot to your ego. And, you know, so I chose to view it the other way. And I just tried to take the opportunity and run with it. But, you know, for me, we'll see what happens this year. I think I made a pretty good name for myself in the fall league this past year and in big league camp this year. So, you know, hopefully they need some help in the bullpen, and hopefully I'm the guy they choose to come up and help them out. So we'll, you know, it'll be fun to see.
Yeah, to your point, man, if these guys didn't believe in you as a pitcher, they'd be like, hey, you know what? We don't really care about developing them. The fact that they're willing to go out of their way to say, hey, this is where we think you fit like better with us, mm-hmm. kind of shows that they do have a plan for you. And I think that that's the best way to handle it, is you say, this is a great opportunity for me to grow. And, I mean, you don't need me to tell you, but that's just, you know, it's really cool. And that obviously shows that they have some faith in you.
For sure. No doubt. It's all about, you know, it's all about perspective and how you look at it.
Yeah, so, good. Yeah, so kind of moving off of Cardinals and just kind of, you know, your team so far. We kind of have some random just baseball questions for you. So who's the one person in your mind that it can be more than one that has kind of helped you the most in your development throughout your baseball career?
Wow. Specifically baseball, I would say probably one of my coaches, Jamie Evans. He helped me a ton with my pitching throughout the years, and he worked with me in one of my back in high school, and then I continued to work with him in high school and college, and he worked with the Blue Jays for a little bit, and then you know, we talk, you know, several times a week, and you know, have a great relationship. So I thankfully met him at a young age, and I give him a lot of the credit throughout high school of helping me, you know, gain velocity and, you know, just kind of keep me going throughout the years.
How fast are you throwing? Speaking of that velocity,
In the fall league, I was up to 99. So I had a little velocity jump when I went out there.
99. So. Oh my God.
So a
not 100 though, not 100.
You know, why do we have to go there? I tried so hard not to be the guy to fall 1 mile an hour short, but yeah, we're still working on it. So
gives you something to look forward to.
Yeah,
you got time. So one of my roommates was asking me who we were interviewing today, mm-hmm. and I go, you know, I'm interviewing a kid who's pitching for the Cardinals, you know, and he goes, okay, so you think, give me 100 at bats, how many hits can I get against him? And I was like, dude, zero. he would, and I didn't know how hard you threw. I'm just like,
which roommate are we talking?
Holtzy.
I knew it, dude. Yeah, I knew it was gonna be Holtzy.
Well, I mean, the other two wouldn't ask because they. I mean, I just don't think they'd be as confident in their baseball abilities. But he was like, "Yeah, how many hits could I get against him?" I was like a hard zero.
Okay, but Timmy, confident. how many hits do you think you're gonna get? Okay, Connor can only throw fastballs for strikes. How many hits do you get?
I don't see. Okay, so if you can sit there and watch a fastball when it's 99 miles an hour, it's. I mean, I'm not even gonna think that I have a chance. But like, you can close your eyes and swing and get a hit. But like, if he can pitch whatever pitch he wants, I'm screwed. No, there's no chance.
Yeah,
I mean, I would say it depends on his baseball experience.
Timmy was pretty good. That's like, if I got up there, I would look like an idiot. Like, I was okay when I was younger in high school, but like, Timmy was a good baseball player. So Timmy, I don't know, he might be able to like poke one out to right center on you.
Yeah, I mean, the defense can only be in so many spots at one time. So
there you go. Exactly. It's all about placement, right? I might, mm-hmm. I might bunt. I used to bunt for a base hit a lot. I might bunt for a base hit. If that counts, it counts.
I mean, it hits a hit. So
exactly. If they don't ask how many.
If this ever happens and Timmy tries to lay down a bunt, you better give him some sweet shin music.
I mean, yeah, that's, you know, that's not cool.
Yeah. Fair enough. So when I asked you about the person with the most help throughout your baseball career, you kind of had a little comment. Is there something that helped you, you know, non-baseball wise that, you know, you've kind of been very thankful for?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so one side of my family is very athletics oriented, and so my grandfather played college baseball, and then my aunt was a women's basketball player she was the national Gatorade player of the year, so best player in the country. She went to Tennessee and played for Pat Summitt, and then you know, played in the Final Four and the Junior Olympics and all that stuff. So she can kind of relate to, even though it wasn't baseball, playing, you know, at a high level, you know. So as far as the mental stuff and some of that stuff goes, you know, she's not going to teach me how to pitch, but as far as your thought process and, you know, work ethic and just the mental ups and downs and stuff like that, she can totally relate. So she's always been there for me in that aspect.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's sweet, man. Who's your favorite baseball player?
While you're growing up, I don't know. Can you like have?
I was gonna say. Now? I mean, yeah. I mean, me. I guess, like, you know.
Yeah, dude. Hey, good for you, man.
No, when I was growing up, I really liked Pedro Martinez, and
love that answer.
I might have been a little young to kind of truly appreciate everything he was doing when he did it, but I was a Red Sox fan growing up, and I just remember watching Pedro and seeing how much his ball moved, and just, you know, thinking it was the coolest thing.
He's the GOAT.
I've like looked back at some of the stats, and some of the seasons he had was just like almost mind blowing. Like, you kind of like tell your head back and like, wow, did he really do that in a whole season? So fair enough. Yeah, like not being old enough to actually experience it and cherish it is a good statement.
Yeah.
What's your a little controversial here? What's your take on like steroid users and if they should be allowed in the Hall of Fame?
I mean, see, it's not fair because they cheated. So I'm not, you know, I don't think they should be allowed in, but, you know, at the same time, like, you know, taking steroids, you know, for Barry Bonds, for example, taking steroids, you know, didn't take away the fact that he had one of the best eyes in all of baseball and some of the best hand-eye coordination baseball's ever seen. So, like, you know, as far as his, you know, steroids doesn't improve your play discipline, like, you know, you still have to make contact with the ball. Just when you do, it might go farther. So he's still one of the best hitters the game has ever seen. But, you know, those balls might not have gone as far if he wasn't taking steroids. So
yeah,
I don't think it's cool because they cheated. And there's a lot of guys that take a lot of pride now and being steroid-free and PED-free and stuff like that. So there's a lot of, you know, just, a, you know, players taking their own stance on stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't – that stuff's not cool, man. You play the game straight up.
It is tough to say, like, either way, you know, because you made two good points. It's like you see both sides of it. Not cool. The guy cheated. But at the same time, he would have been a Hall of Famer anyway.
Or so close to it, yeah.
Yeah, right. So so you think he's in or he's out? Is that, like, if it's up to you?
I mean, I think he's out. I don't think it should discredit anything. I mean, he still should go down and be remembered as one of the best and you know, players in our game, but – you know, which he should be, and he will be, but I don't think he should be in the Hall of Fame for it.
Good take.
What about Pete Rose?
See, that's different, man. It's weird. It's like, and I'm not as informed about him. I just know he betted on baseball, but like,
yeah,
if they could prove that he was doing something wrong or he was like fixing games or something, then for sure, no chance. But I mean, what he did was incredible. So I think there's a big difference between betting on baseball and betting on like games you're playing in.
Right.
So
what have they proven? I mean, Timmy, do you know, like,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that as far as I'm informed is that he got caught on betting on games that he was playing in and coaching in, or maybe one or the other. I'm kind of fuzzy on it too, but I'm almost to the point where it's like, I kind of have the same feeling that you do with Connor, is that, like, what Barry Bonds did is he, like, straight up cheated. Like, whether he needed to do it or not, like, is another discussion. But, like, what Pete Rose did as a player is just, like, so mind-boggling. Like, I almost feel like they have to let him in. That's my opinion. But
I think Pete Rose's thing was he, like, admitted that he betted on the games, but he said he only bet in favor of the team that he was playing for. So he was never betting against the teams and fixing games.
Yeah, like Floyd Mayweather bet on himself to win the fight against Manny Pacquiao and won like tons of money. What's the problem with that?
Right, you should be able to bet on yourself. So until something comes out that he's fixing
hot
games, until somebody, yeah, I think that he's in. I think he deserves to be in.
We should probably be more informed on these things when we're asking him on our podcast.
Yeah, hey, I know. True.
Lesson learned. All right, and the last one, you kind of mentioned the College World Series. A lot of kids we've asked this question to a lot of other kids, and they've brought back up high school and winning in high school. What's your favorite baseball memory to this point?
Oh, wow. I would say maybe, I mean, I think it's gotta be winning the national championship. I mean, I remember, I think it was early that year, Duke won the, you know, March Madness and college basketball finals. And I remember seeing, I think it was Jahlil Okafor was playing that year, and just seeing those guys with the hats on and the t-shirts and the confetti and stuff and them celebrating. And I was like, you know, dang, that's so cool. And like, just kind of like almost like dreaming a little bit about, you know, what that would be like. And then, you know, when we got the final out and running out there, and all of a sudden there's a confetti and someone's handing me a t-shirt and I've got a hat on, and I was like, you know, holy crap, this is like, I'm living that right now, and that's what's happening. And that was, I don't know why that was what I thought of. Maybe it's because I had just seen it. And then, you know, it's emotional with everything you go through that year. And, you know, especially the year before we lost and was watching Vanderbilt do all that right in front of us. So, I mean, that's gotta be, you know, that's gotta be the best memory so far.
Absolutely.
So I got one more thing. I just was thinking of it as you were talking about that. Did you ever come close to like a Little League World Series berth when you were 12?
No, for whatever reason, where I grew up, they didn't like Little League. I think we had it, but it, like, I mean, like no one played it. So there was just a rec league around us that was really competitive. And so, like, you know, all the friends that you and I shared back home, we all played in that rec league together, and it was very competitive. I'm sure, you know, if we had a Little League like formal team, we would have been pretty darn good. But for whatever reason, people just, you know, Little League wasn't very prominent.
So my
claim to fame, Connor, is that team that I played on with Preston and Jay Lee and Luke and Hunter, we lost in the Cooperstown championship when we were 12.
Cooperstown, yeah, that's a different story, but
it's a different animal.
Yeah, we had some good placings there too, but you know, that's the, in my opinion, that's the real baseball, not Little League. So
yeah, so and like it's weird to explain too, because everyone, like, you know, Muzz and all these other people played Little League. We just didn't have like for whatever reason, it wasn't like prominent.
It's weird that you wouldn't, because the Little League World Series is like, you have teams coming from everywhere, like Curacao sending a team, and you're telling me that you guys didn't have a team to try to get there? That's crazy.
I mean, yeah, there technically was Chesapeake Little League, but
people didn't play.
To my memory, I only knew one kid that played in it. Like, this yeah. other just public rec league was super competitive, and that's where all these teams were and all these kids were playing. So, you know, there was no sense in going to play with, you know, not to disrespect anybody, but these kids that weren't any good, and, you know, right, when yeah. all these other good kids are playing in this other league. So,
yeah, makes sense. Yeah,
it was weird.
Yeah.
So, Muzz, you have anything else?
No, just want Little League World Series is a bucket list thing for me. I want to do a little trip out there. I think that's a sweet atmosphere. But I also now hearing you talk about it, I don't know, I would love to go see the College World Series. I think that'd be awesome.
That would be
so really Timmy, cool. we'll add that to our list of things to do.
See, I would much rather go to Omaha than Little League World Series.
I'd be 100% down for that.
Muzz has been begging me to go to the Little League World Series like 4 years out. And I'm like, no, like I don't really want to go.
I just think it's
Omaha.
Like,
yeah, I mean, when I got promoted out of rookie ball, we played a team in Williamsport, and we drove by the Little League World Series when it was going on, and there was a lot of hoopla and stuff, and it looked all right. But as far as Omaha goes, I mean, that's legit. Like, I would 100% recommend going there instead of Williamsport. You know, not to try to shatter your dreams of going to Louisville. By all means, you could still go, but I would 100% recommend Omaha.
I'll transition my bugging Timmy to. I'll bug you to go to the College World Series now. We'll make that happen.
I'd be more inclined to answer those texts. All right, so the last question we have is one we've asked all of our interviewees starting pretty soon. Back, we haven't asked all of them, but it's one we're kind of implementing now. So, would you rather live the rest of your life with a popcorn kernel stuck in the back of your throat, or live the rest of your life with permanent Cheetos fingers?
Oh my god!
It's two tough answers. I'll give you that, but there's definitely a right answer and a wrong answer.
Shut up, Muzz.
I mean, disagree. I kind of want to say popcorn kernel.
Yes!
Oh, wrong answer. You
save the day.
Timmy,
save the day.
You don't understand how much he needed that. He's been we're wiping the floor with Cheetos fingers the last few people that have come on.
I mean,
Give me a reasoning.
Because, like, if you're going to have Cheeto fingers, you can't, like, every time you use your phone, like, anything you touch is going to be almost ruined, so.
Thank you. You can't, like, have a girlfriend. Like, what are you going to do? Like, you wear gloves all the time?
I mean, the kernel will be discomforting, but it's better than not being able to touch anything.
Like, you're going to.
Driving your car, like, I couldn't pitch with Cheetos on my fingers. Like,
I don't know, man. Now it's like a spitball. It's like, pitch. You have Cheetos fingers.
Couldn't pitch, now I'm unemployed. Like, that was really, like, so.
It's the way more logical answer. I think people everyone can relate to having a popcorn kernel in the back of their throat, and they're like, I can't live like that. But my also, I think, is like, you'll get used to it. But you can never You might be able to get used to Cheetos fingers, but you can't, like, live your life with Cheetos fingers.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I'm glad we agree. Suck it, Muzz.
I've stated my case before. I think that it's the internal discomfort versus the external, like, acceptance of people around you. Hey, I'll give you guys this one. Maybe we can move on, I guess.
Awesome. Well, hey, Connor, really appreciate you taking the time to come join us. Join us over the phone and talk about everything. And obviously, you know, best of luck the rest of the way in spring training and throughout this year. We'll definitely be following along. So just, you know.
Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me on. Best of luck with everything.
For sure, dude.
Yep. Take it easy.
Yep, take care.
That interview was brought to you by State and Liberty. State and Liberty was founded to develop the perfect dress shirt for athletes. Off-the-rack dress shirts are made for the masses, not for somebody with an athletic build. They provide more room in the upper body with an extremely tailored waist, catering to those with a V-shaped body type. Not only are these shirts stretchy and comfy, but they're crazy low maintenance. The shirts are wrinkle-free, machine washable, and hang dry in about 20 minutes. Guys, I am not kidding. I heard nothing but great stuff about this company, and I finally went in and got myself a dress shirt and a peacoat. They are my two favorite clothing items in my closet right now. If you've never shopped with them before, head over to stateandliberty.com and use our promo code POSTGAMESHAKE for 10% off today. Do it.
That was our interview with St. Louis Cardinals prospect Connor Jones. I had a great time interviewing him. He was awesome. What'd you think, Tim?
Yeah, as we said before, it was a great conversation. He was easy to interview, and some of the stuff he was, you know, got into and started talking about was really interesting. So I had a blast as well.
When we asked him how fast he throws, I was expecting like low 90s, and he goes 99 miles per hour. And we gave him a little bit for not hitting 100, but dude, that's crazy.
There's something to be said for being able to throw 99. I mean, like 98 is really fast, but just not as cool as 99. And I think, 100 would be sweet too, but 99 is just like a sick number.
And I wonder, to that point, how many guys that throw 99 don't make it to the MLB? And that's just something I don't know the answer to. I'm sure a lot of guys get buried, but that's a crazy thing to be able to do, and it's got to bode well for his chances of making the show.
Sure, they at least get a chance. I'm sure a lot of these clubs are like, if he throws 99, like you can't teach that necessarily, right? Yeah. So then you can teach everything else, work on mechanics, work on secondary pitches, and if you have the heat, you have the heat.
I just picture – what movie is it? Maybe The Rookie with Dennis Quaid or whatever his name is?
Yeah, The Rookie.
When he throws like gas and the guy's holding the radar gun and he sees it and he looks over to the guy next to him, shows him the radar gun. I picture him doing that for Connor. Like this kid's throwing 99. Are you kidding?
If we had the capabilities of putting like a little like video together with that clip and then putting like Connor's face on Dennis Quaid's body – and like and you holding the radar gun and looking at me and my face is there, how sick would that be?
That would be awesome. So this is a good time to announce that we would love a summer intern. We are not going to pay you anything, but if you
be our friend.
But if you love our podcast / love podcasting / want some like media exposure to put on your resume, let us know. If you can do anything like that, we would love to have you.
Absolutely. Need some help from that kind of
crowd.
What's the demographic?
Right word? Yeah, demographic. No, that's the right word. Demographic.
Yeah. From the media conscious demographic. Oh my God. We got to stop. Okay. So
March Madness.
Great. It was great talking to Connor. Yeah. Best of luck the rest of not the rest of the way, but beginning of the season and opening day is Thursday. So we'll definitely be following him closely, but the topic of the hour, topic of the day are two things. One, you mentioned before, Gronk retiring. Before we get to that, March Madness was obviously on everyone's brains, filling out brackets, all this kind of stuff. So you didn't have the best first weekend, did you?
No. That would be a really nice way of putting it. So here's what I'm going to say is that there's two ways to fill out a bracket. Way one, which you do it because you're a little bish, is you say, hey, I'm going to try to win my bracket pool. Way two is the way that I do it, and I say, I want to have the first perfect bracket of all time. And that usually doesn't bode well for my ranking in the league, but when I'm like 43 years old and I finally hit my perfect bracket, you're going to see who's laughing.
Okay, so we're going to hold you to that. I think I think that's dumb because you're trying to win something and you're not putting what you think is the best bracket together to then win that subsequent competition. So I think that's just stupid and delusional.
No, that's not true. That's not true.
But this year is different because every single favorite on Saturday and Sunday, so the second round, won. And that's the first time that's ever happened since the field was 64/68. So it was
I didn't realize that.
It's a rare March Madness in the fact that, yeah, there's a 12 seed in the Sweet 16. And I don't know if there's any even other higher seeds, 2, 3, 4. I mean, there's a 5, but even Auburn, that's it. Yeah, there's a 12, and then the other highest is a 5, and Auburn was the favorite over Kansas, the 4 seed. So it's a bracket that for you looks worse because there really weren't any upsets per se. Like, right. Even though Oregon made the Sweet 16, they were playing a 13 seed who they were marginally better than. So, like, they should have won that game. And, yeah.
This is a Sweet 16 that you realistically could have predicted.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is, like, this was the easiest time to pick 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 12. Like, it wasn't that hard. If you picked Oregon, congratulations. But other than that, I mean, realistically, Duke shouldn't be in the tournament anymore. And I want to start with that. Is like, I feel so terrible for every single UCF player, coach,
yeah,
everybody, graduate assistant, fan, parent, anybody that has affiliations with that school. Like, they deserved, and deserving to win doesn't mean you win. Like, Duke found a way to win, and good teams find ways to win. But they didn't box out on a mystery. They didn't. Then they fouled Zion on the and one. Didn't get the rebound on the missed free throw. And then missed basically two layups at the end of the game. The first shot was hard. And then I cannot believe that follow-up layup didn't go in. And we're not going to dissect the game at all, but I just feel so bad for those guys.
Yeah, I feel awful. And I think that so I didn't really watch the game. I was at the roller rink. I needed to get out of my house. And I'm not a big college basketball fan in general. I just love the competition. So when I went back and watched the replays and stuff, the one thing that stuck out to me was that 2-on-1 alley-oop attempt that the kid kind of botched.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? There's like a little over a minute left.
Yeah.
If he slams that home, they go up by 6 instead of 4. And then Duke ends up coming down and hitting a 3. And that changes the game.
It does, yeah.
And obviously, there were, you know, 3 other plays, including the layups at the end, were just crazy. I can't imagine if I was watching that live or if I had bet on the game or something. Their people must have been pulling their hair out, but it was a wild game. I feel bad. Are you a root for Duke guy, or are you a root for the underdog guy?
So, like, the whole Duke thing is funny. I didn't pick Duke to win in my pool, and I picked them to lose in the championship game. So obviously it would have kind of put a bit of a, you know, wrench in my bracket. But I was rooting against them because it would have messed up a lot of other people's champion. And knowing how many people's days it would have ruined, as like a cynic, I was kind of like, man, I really hope Duke loses. Like, imagine how many people were sweating out that game yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
To me, I was just like UCF hit a 3 to go up by 4, and I was like, oh my god, they might win this game. I was getting so excited, and I like, you know, you're, I don't even know like what how to describe it, but, like, my heart was like pumping through my chest, and I have like nothing riding on the game. I don't really care who wins at all, but that's when you know like a game's got you hook, line, sinker.
But so just for one second though, separate your bracket and other people's brackets from the concept of Duke playing a number 9 seed UCF. And who are you rooting for in that game? Are you rooting for the David, or are you rooting for the Goliath?
David every single time.
Yeah. And I'm a David guy most of the time too. But I also think when you get a guy like Zion, who's a likable person, and a team that's just done so well, it's fun to be a part of them continuing success. It's like the whole rooting for Alabama in football thing. It's kind of – I feel like our culture is kind of – I don't know, regressing, is that the word? Where, like, everybody gets a participation trophy, everybody wants. I kind of want to see the top guy just continue to demolish. And, like, it's great to see them get taken down, but I like the continued success.
I feel where you're going. And Zion is a very likable guy. I don't dislike him at all. I you know, like watching him play. It's enjoyable. I just feel like he's going to get his, and so are those other kids on that team, and they won the ACC. Like, they're ungodly figures compared to UCF players. Like, those UCF players might never ever get that opportunity again to be on the stage like that, playing Duke, like playing the consensus number 1 pick, maybe the number 2 or 3 pick in RJ Barrett. Like, they had a chance to, like, on the big stage, and some of those kids play like out of their minds. I just feel like they're never going to get that chance again, and that's why I will 100% until I changed my mind. root for David.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, it was just a great game. I was good. Glad we had a great game. For the March Madness this year is kind of dull. Like,
yeah,
a lot of blowouts.
Yeah, I'm glad you watched it.
I watched the highlights. It was great. Yeah, I was pretty nervous.
Yeah, no buzzer beaters this year, which it's very disappointing. Like, there's some close games, but man, a lot of them have been blowouts. Like, I'm turning on games and I'm like, I was excited to watch this, and that game's a blowout. That game's a blowout. That game's a blowout. It's like, well, I was watching like the Rangers play on Saturday night. Like, it's like the Rangers suck this year, and I wanted to be watching March Madness, but that's what I was doing instead. It just kind of felt weird, to your point of how it's been disappointing.
Well, there's plenty of time, though. So
there is.
We still got a lot of games left.
So with the first weekend done, we're recalibrating, and essentially you have a perfect bracket, like, right now. Who are you going with to the Final Four? Final Four and champion, just very quickly.
All right. I'm sticking with Michigan State. They just pounded Minnesota, which is great. Makes me feel better about their, not so dominant win in the first round. So Michigan State, North Carolina. So those are my two guys. Then it comes down to, I think I got to throw Gonzaga in. I have them win in my other bracket. The Murray State thing was more of just on a whim. Obviously not the smartest choice. And then, I like Purdue, honestly. I like Purdue a lot. I'll go with Purdue.
They look good, yeah. I mean, I like all those picks. Michigan State looked good. I'm hoping.
I just don't want to pick all one seeds.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a Michigan State-Duke matchup. So I'm going to – all my Final Four teams are still in, so sick. I can't change it. I don't want to change it. Tennessee kind of made me nervous. They almost lost to Iowa. I think Purdue was way better than people thought they were. They kind of dismantled Villanova in a weird kind of lopsided game that felt like it wouldn't happen again if they play that game 10 times. So I'm gonna stick to it. Tennessee, UNC, Gonzaga, and Duke, and I'm picking Tennessee to beat Duke in the championship.
Cool. I still got Michigan State beating North Carolina in the finals, so at least that game's intact.
Yeah, if that happens, I think you might do better than you think you're going to do. So
it's true. It's so weighted down the stretch.
It is.
I actually might still have a chance if this is the finals.
Absolutely. If you pick the champion and then say you pick the champion who beat and the guy that they beat, you pick them as well. I think you are almost a shoo-in to win.
Yeah. All right, cool. Hope you're still alive.
It is. And with sad regret, we move on to our next topic of Mr. Rob Gronkowski retiring. Mm. You kind of got into it, being at the roller rink and scrolling through Instagram, but a day afterwards you slept on it, you worked today, you kind of had a little bit of time for it to soak in. How does it feel now?
I'm not surprised, and I'm honestly kind of happy for him, because he's just a guy that when you watch him get hit, you're like, damn, dude, that looks like it hurt. And I want the best for him. He's given so much to the Patriots that nobody's mad at him. But it is going to be tough. It's going to be weird. So I think, without taking it out of context, and I don't know, you're probably going to love this comment for me. It's for the first time in my entire life, with Gronk retiring, it feels like the beginning of the end for the Patriots as we know them. And
am I supposed to comment, or
I mean, you can if you want, but I just mean, and not to like overreact to that, I just feel like it's the beginning of the end. Like, I think if they won the Super Bowl this coming year, you can't be surprised. As long as Tom Brady's still in the field, great. Brady's got maybe 2 years left in him, and that comes down to, we can talk about our little bet there, our side bet.
Yep.
I think that it's about time. And with Brady, with Gronk, it just feels like the first domino. But with that being said as well, I don't think that the Patriots are going to go away. It's just going to be a lot different. And like, Brady's going to go in a couple of years. There's really going to be nobody left. Edelman, I don't know how long he sticks around for. I feel like, I don't know. There's just a lot going on. And it feels like, for the first time, I'm like, okay, the Patriots dynasty that's been going on for this long is going to be the bookend on the near side is going to finally be put up. And so we'll see, but it kind of sucks. But I don't know. What do you think of it as just an NFL fan?
I'm going to pump my own tires and say I called it. I thought he should retire, because he has a chance to go out on his own terms and go out on top. And barely anybody gets a chance to go out on their own terms, let alone do that by also being a Super Bowl champion. So I think it's awesome. I think he absolutely deserves it. He owes nothing back to anybody, the Patriots, the NFL, anybody. He did it the right way, and He was a beast of a player. I am very curious to see how things are going to go, like you kind of brought up, with him not in the fold. I mean, he's been there, and he's been essentially Brady's go-to guy since he got into the league. And Brady's numbers, now you can make numbers look however they want, you know, with or without somebody, but his touchdown to interception ratio, 4.3 with Gronk, 2.73 without Gronk. Obviously, it's a little bit worse. His QBR goes from 77.3 with Gronk to 61 without him. I mean, you can play with these numbers however you want. Obviously, he is better with Gronk on the field. So if that's, like you said, the first domino to fall, who knows how long Edelman will be there? Probably a couple more years. I mean, I see Edelman, like, he's not going to play if Brady's not playing.
Right. That's kind of what's going to happen.
However long the rest of this does last, and essentially it lasts as long as Tom Brady plays, because then I don't think it's just going to be nearly as comparable. So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, he has the most touchdowns in the league since 2010, five more than Antonio Brown, which
is crazy.
He's been the best at his position essentially since he came in the NFL, and it's a bruising position, and he does all the other little things great, like we've talked about blocking and everything. He's never been in the news for anything bad. He's a pretty funny guy. So I'm happy for him. He's one of the guys on the Patriots that I hate anybody, but I mean, seeing him retire on his own terms.
Everybody loves Gronk, dude. You can't hate Gronk. And I think KFC, like Barstool guy was talking about it the other day, or obviously yesterday, I think last night, he said he hated how much he loved Gronk when he came into the Barstool office. And I think everybody gets that. They just like, it's just an unhateable little kid in this huge man body.
Yeah.
So I do want to say, there are three tweets that I thought were really interesting. One was from Mike Garofalo, said, had Rob Gronkowski's agent, Drew Rosenhaus, or however you pronounce his name, on NFL Network with us. He said he presented Gronk with a plan to speak to the team about sitting out the spring and even into training camp. Believes they could have worked out a plan with the Patriots. If Gronk was interested, he wasn't. So that makes it seem that he's completely out. Then he says he was completely shocked. I thought Rob was going to come back and play. This is from Ian Rappaport. His speculation, gut feeling, is that Gronk comes back at some point, even though Rob said he's done. And then Drew Rosenhaus finally said, if the team is struggling or they needed him at some point next year, and let's just say hypothetically Tom Brady gave him a call and said, Rob, I need you, I wouldn't be shocked if he came back to play a few games.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would be shocked if the last thing came true. Let's say they're 6-6 and they need to win like three of the last four games or all four, and he's like, "Hey, you working out?" And Gronk's like, "Yeah, maybe." He's like, "Okay, we'll just get your ass here," because he'd be healthy as ever, you know.
Hey, Rob, are you working out? Not really. Are your hands still incredibly massive? Oh yeah. Okay, come play and win us a couple games.
You haven't shrunk yet, and if you can still catch the ball, we could use you. Yeah, I don't think anyone would be shocked if that happened.
Yeah.
I think the first one was interesting that they kind of gave him that the opportunity to sit on it, and the Patriots wouldn't have, you know, essentially moved on / signed anybody else. But I still, I just feel like, man, he's almost kind of been like, you know what, I've taken a beating for so long. We just won the Super Bowl. If I come back, it's almost going to be like, bleh. I don't know.
I agree.
That's my thought.
I agree. There's 2 points. I mean, I feel like at 29 years old, he's going to take some time off. He's going to say, wow, my body feels pretty good. Tom Brady shoots him a text. Hey, man, would love to have you out there for the stretch run. And then there's the other side of it that's like, the guy went out at 29 years old. His body was hurting. And he won a Super Bowl. Why even bother coming back? There's no reason to. There's no reason to. Hang out with Camille. Do your thing.
Exactly. The other thing I want to touch on Patriots-wise is, did you see that they're not opening up the season on Thursday Night Football like the Super Bowl champ usually does?
Yeah. What is that all about, dude?
So it's the 100th anniversary of essentially the NFL pro football, basically. So they went with like the classic rivalry Bears-Packers, but the Patriots are opening up on Sunday Night Football week one, and their opponent is TBD. So I want to know who you'd want them to play, and I'm going to read you their schedule. I think I know who you're going to pick, but let's just have a little chat about it. Bills, Dolphins, Jets, obviously. Ravens, Bengals, Steelers, Redskins, Eagles, Texans, Browns, Cowboys, Giants, Chiefs. Who do you want them to open up with at home on week one?
I feel like there's a lot of ways I could take it. Ravens would be funny, but that's no offense. That's not what I want opening night.
Well, then I'm playing them at home. So I should have put these home and away. So actually this isn't an accurate depiction. But
this is an away game?
The Ravens, yeah, they're playing the Ravens at Baltimore, so I should have prepared better. That's my bad.
Okay, so the Patriots schedule is set, but just not Sunday night? How does that work?
Well, the Patriots know who they're playing on the road or at home. They just don't know what week and when they're playing them.
Okay. And then, so what were the home teams?
I'm going to look at it right now.
Whatever. I want to see them play the Browns, dude. I think that everybody wants to see them play the Browns.
I thought you were going to say Browns, but I also thought you'd say Chiefs. So they play the Browns and they play the Chiefs at home. I think either one of those would be good.
I don't want to see them play the Chiefs opening night. I've seen them play the Chiefs opening night and they lost. Yeah.
They lose. Yeah,
I'm not going to say they're going to lose. I'm just saying there's a much better chance of them losing.
They lose in the beginning of the year, though. They always do that. They go like 2-2 or 3-1. They always lose pretty early on, and they just go on a run like in November or October, November.
I paid $500 to go to that. Sitting the nosebleeds, dude. The back row far – or it was actually near corner, so you could barely see the banner, that banner-raising night 2 years ago. And then they got kind of like killed by the Chiefs. It was insane. And took a little wind out of the sails. So I would love to see them play a tune-up game, or I'd love to see them like – the NFL's like, hey, the Browns are going to be good this year. Check them out Sunday Night Football against the Pats week one.
I would like that too, because I think it would shut up a lot of people about the Browns. And then I'd be hoping the Pats just put them in their place. But
true.
Or the Browns, you know, shut them up early. Who knows? But I would love to see them play the Chiefs week one. I would also not mind seeing that like week 14 when they're both, you know, in their primes down the stretch. But
that's what I want to see. I'm with you.
I think seeing the Browns week one at Gillette would be a good test. I think everyone would watch it, and the ratings would be through the roof. So
the only thing that I want is I want Gordon to be playing against the Browns. So, and I think he's probably going to get like a 2-game suspension, maybe 4, but probably 2. So maybe hold off on that, I guess. But that's I don't know. That's going too much into the weeds.
Muzz might go to training camp and like ask everybody he can.
I didn't even
like, hey,
think of that, dude. I'm definitely going to training camp, and I'm just gonna look for Gordon and be like, "Where's he at?
When is Josh Gordon playing? When's he gonna play? He's gonna get the inside scoop, and he's gonna have like a microphone on him the entire time. He's just gonna play the audio on a podcast. Is gonna be Muzz at training camp.
I'll do a post game shake reporting session. Me and you can go. We'll set up a table or something.
That'd be kind of fun.
That would be sick. We'll keep that in mind.
Absolutely. Do you have anything else you want to touch on before we wrap up this episode?
No, that does it for me. That was a good episode.
It does, yeah. So, again, thank you to Connor for coming on and sharing his whole story and experience. Again, we had a great time with him. And if your bracket's doing great, congrats. If it's not doing great, maybe you still have your champion like Muzz is and your hope isn't completely lost yet.
Yeah. So that should be a fun weekend coming up. I'm looking forward to talking about it next week.
Absolutely. So, again, thank you for listening. Apple Podcasts, subscribe, leave us a rating, all those good things. Muzz, anything to add?
Honestly, tell us how much you love us.
Love it. Love it. So
that's all I got for you.
That does it. That does it for episode 21. Again, thanks for listening, and thanks to Connor for coming on, and that wraps it up.
All right, we're out of here. Peace.
See ya.